Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, everybody. Recruiting Animal here again. Listen, I got to warn you today. We haven't even started the show, and I'm already going totally crazy. And when I tell you why, you're going to be sympathetic. You know what happened to me this morning? First, I see Mr. Mustache wrote an article about me. And what's the headline? The Recruiting Animal is not a dummy. Who said I was a dummy? He doesn't say, but I want to know, and I have a right to know. That's just the first thing. Then, listen to this, I get an email from LinkedIn. They're suspending my account. I'm not kidding. And why? Why are they suspending my account? Apparently, Recruiting Animal is not a real name. I said to them, look, you guys, haven't you ever heard about diversity? For Pete's sake, it's 2008. Half of Toronto is foreign born. Not everybody's got a name like Bill Jones anymore. Recruiting Animal can't be all that weird. So why don't you just leave me alone? And listen, I'm not finished. While I'm on the topic of pushy people who just don't get it, let me tell you a story. I was on the elevator this morning on my way up to the studio, and a loud, stupid woman was yakking to a young couple like they were her victims, right? And what was she complaining about? Her kid went to school, and the teacher told the class, listen, kids, if your parents hit you, you tell us. Well, this woman didn't like that at all. She said, that's why this country is in turmoil. That's what she said. Well, I couldn't take that lying down. I said, no, you stupid twit. That's why this is a great country. That's why we are living in fantastic times. The boss culture is falling apart, and nobody has the right to push anybody else around, at least not here. If you want your kids to listen to you, you got to say something that makes sense. You can't just punch them out. You got it? That's right, friends. We live in a sales culture. If you want something, you got to make a persuasive business case. I'm gonna calm down. You got to make a business case, and you got to teach other people. You don't have to teach them anything. You got to treat them well. That's what I wanted to say. And if you don't, your family isn't going to stick together. And if you don't, your community isn't going to stick together. And if you don't, your employees aren't going to stay with your firm. These days, in countries like Canada and the USA, salespeople are the salt of the earth. That's why we got Lee Saltz here today. Now, Lee is a salesman, and he specializes in hiring salespeople. He knows how to bring the passive candidates in and screen the losers out. And at least, well, that's what he says, and I hope he does, because we're going to put him through the grinder to see if his resume is real. So get ready, Lee, to meet me, the Recruiting Animal, on the Recruiting Animal Show!
The werewolf is neither man nor wolf, but a satanic creature with the worst qualities of both.
And do you expect me to believe that a man so afflicted actually becomes a wolf under the influence of the full moon? I'm afraid, sir, that I gave up my belief in goblins, witches, personal devils, and werewolves at the age of 6.
Lee Saltz, are you there?
I am here, Mike. Good morning.
Good morning to you. Now, I told you, I'm a bit crazy today. You better have good answers for me or it's going to get real ugly real fast. Listen, do you wear glasses?
I do.
Have you ever tried putting them in the dishwasher?
I have not. No, I can't say I have.
I'm a very creepy guy, and that idea just came to me while I was doing my introduction. Why not? I mean, it must be a good way to get them clean.
Listen,
here's a good question. I'm going to get right into the business now. You know, there's an election going on in the United States. At least the primaries are in motion. And I was planning to ask you, well, first of all, I assume you're a good judge of sales talent. Am I right about that, Lee?
I would sure hope to think so.
A genius level or smart level? What would you say?
Oh, no one should refer to themselves as a genius. I'd like to think I'm pretty smart at it.
Okay, okay. Taking a look at all the contenders in the presidential primaries, I was going to ask you who the best salespeople are. But according to your philosophy of sales, that's too general a statement. What you stress is that when you're looking at who's the best salesperson, you got to say who's going to be the best salesperson in that specific job. Am I right?
You're 100% right.
Okay, so who's the best one?
Well, there isn't a best one. There's a right one.
Okay.
And there's an old movie with Richard Pryor in it, Vote None of the Above. That's my vote. Vote None of the Above.
Okay, well, I don't know if people... You know, the people might disagree with you. There's a few people here. We'll give them a chance in a second. Okay, Lee, here's another question. You don't want to take that one seriously, right? Am I right about that?
Absolutely not.
Okay. You're in the washroom. In your office, it's a public washroom, you're washing your hands. Someone gets out of the stall behind you, goes straight out the door. You're waiting to interview somebody. When you get to the office, you see it's the same guy. Question number one, do you shake his hand? Question number two, if he's a perfect fit, do you hire him? Question number three, do you raise the issue?
Wow. What a way to start off. Let's
get
see.
Going. So, you said you could handle it.
Absolutely. So... the first thing I'm going to do is I'm going to guess that they're right-handed, and so I'm going to shake their left hand.
Okay, right. That's going to go very far. He won't want to hire you, but that's, go ahead. No, sir, take it seriously. I got to tell you, it's happened to everybody. Dave Manister, you're there, right? Dave, who's 212? You want to help
that's
me here?
I was okay. On mute. How are you doing?
Okay, fine. Have you ever been in a washroom and, you know, people don't wash their hands all the time, right?
Yes, that is
true.
That's
a fair question. Do you want to hire someone like that? Workforce, are you there as well?
I am.
You guys answer that question, then I'll give Lee a chance to think about it. Workforce, would you hire that guy?
I think I'd address the issue first.
What would you say to him? Would you say, hey, you know that bacterial soap in the hospitals? Do you carry it around in your pocket?
I mean, quite simply, you know, I'm a very straightforward guy. I would just say, hey, look, you know, we're all human. We all forget. But, hey, this is something I noticed. You know, see what he does. See if he can handle a little bit of embarrassment.
Dave Manister, before I go back to Lee, do you want to pass on that question or do you have an answer?
I think I'm going to pass on that one.
Okay, we'll go back to Lee. Lee, have you come up with something for me?
Yeah, I think I'd reach into my drawer and take out my little container of antibacterial soap and I'd start putting some on my hand. Say, by the way, would you like some?
Uh-huh. Okay. Okay. You don't want to answer that question. I'm going to give you a break, okay? I'm going to give you a break. Here's another question for you. We're still in the warm-up stage, in case you haven't noticed. Is your real name Leroy or Leland or something like that? And I ask you a question because nobody names their kid Lee. I believe it's some kind of cover-up name, just like people who, you know, whose parents give them the unfortunate name of Eugene, they call themselves Gene.
Yeah, unfortunately, you'd have to do some research on that and find that there are actually a number of people who've been given the name Lee. Lee Majors, for one. Lee Mazzilli.
That's his real name?
That's
Lee
my,
Majors?
That,
okay.
Lee, yep. Lee Mazzilli, former Met player.
Okay.
Lee is it. And Lee is all I got. That's it.
Okay.
That's the whole name.
Okay, okay. I won't go too far. But you know what? I think that's here's something we discussed. I'll get into another serious issue. I hope you don't deflect this one like you did the last two. If your name is Eugene, and you know it's kind of a square name here, okay? Eugene is not a cool name. And you call yourself Gene instead. Well, you know, that's kind of like fluffing things a bit on your resume. If all of a sudden you're Gene Smith or Gene Jones or something like that, right? So you and I disagree about lying on resumes. I say that the only problem with lying on your resume sometimes is that you're going to get caught because there's a lot of prejudices in hiring people that just don't make that much difference. For instance, if you go to university and you've got a degree in political science or English, it really doesn't make that much difference. At least I don't think it necessarily does in your sales job, unless you're selling textbooks, okay? But they'll rule you out. You won't even get into the interview if you don't say that you've got a degree. So just like it's good to give yourself a phony name to sound a bit more cool, why not give yourself a degree as well, just to get around the prejudice, not to really, you know, say that you can do more than you can't.
Yeah, and quite frankly, I spend a lot of time trying to restore honesty and integrity in the sales profession, and I think it starts in the interview process. And I think lying on your resume, and when I say lying, that calling yourself Gene instead of Eugene is one thing. But if you tell me that you've got a bachelor's degree from a particular institution and you've completed it in this year, and you've made it all up, you're not playing on my team.
Why? I mean, you wouldn't even see me if I didn't lie.
I may not have, but what are you going to be doing with my customers? You're going to go tell them that my product does this stuff and it really doesn't?
I'm not going to lie about the things that count, but about the bullshit, yes, I will.
How do I know that?
I don't know. Anybody in the audience have something they want to, you know, chip in here? We got some smart guys there, Lee. I just want to give them a chance.
Mm-hmm.
Don't hire liars.
Don't hire liars. What about fibbers?
Is there a difference?
Yes, there is. Okay, I got your opinion. Workforce, you got some. I love you, Workforce.
I love you, dude. No, it's a slippery slope. Either way you go. To your point, Michael, I think if ultimately the outcome is a good, talented person that's going to drive revenue to the corporation and be ethical,
I didn't understand a word you said. Forget it. Lee, you know what? Sorry, we're going nowhere. Lee, do you know any songs about, you know, people named Lee?
Say that again?
Do you know any songs about people named Lee?
Well, no, but as a kid, it was a lot of fun, had at my expense with adverbally. You know, adverbs typically end in L-Y, so...
No, that's pretty funny, yeah.
Yeah, I did
thought they would have made fun of you for your last name, Salts.
Salt.
Okay, you know, there is a song. Haven't you ever heard of Lee Michaels? You know
no.
what I mean? That song? Lee, you haven't loved me. For Nyon, you don't know that song, eh?
No, I know Bad Leroy Brown, but that one, no.
You said your name's not Leroy. This is about Lee. Okay. Lee. Lee, what question do you want me to ask you at this point? I mean, I have tons of questions, but if you have a favorite, I'll do what you want.
No, absolutely not. Keep going. This is fun.
Okay, Lee. Now, let me ask you this, Lee. Isn't an interview just another sales conversation? And if so, if you're a real salesperson, should you try to close the deal there and then during the interview? And if you don't, is that a knockout blow against the sales rep?
Well, let me respond from both sides, from the employer side and from the candidate side, if I could. From the employer side, I don't think an interview is just a conversation between two people that you then walk away from and say, okay, yeah, seems like a good guy. I think we should go ahead and hire him. I think before you interview, you spend some time and figure out exactly what you need this individual to do that's going to be in this role to be successful. And so what I refer to as formulating a profile of your ideal
sales person. I'm going to come to that separately. Do I have to talk about that before I ask this question? But let's put the employer side. I'll go to that next.
Okay.
Lee believes that you have to create, just like you create a target market for your product, you create a profile for your candidates. And we're going to get into that. That's the heart of your theory, of your philosophy. We'll get there. But let's say I'm a sales rep. I'm coming in to see you. Should I have the intention of closing the deal, or should we wait to discuss that with, you know, I know you have a theory about the candidates interviewing the employers as well. Is this all complex?
Let me start with, you know, the candidate, when they're showing up, you know, one of the things that you hear a lot of times with salespeople is, I just want to find a job where I can make more money. Well, the money's a mirage if that's all you're going into the interview to hear about. First of all, in the first interview, they're typically not talking money. They're trying to screen you and see if you're a right fit for the company. And so your objective as a candidate is to come in and try to figure out if this is going to be the right fit for you. And you can't just show up just like a sales call. You can't show up at the interview and figure it out from there. You got to do some homework to prepare. So you got to look at things like your historical strengths and see what are things that you've done.
Okay,
very
this
well.
Is like, you know, this isn't the answer I was looking for. I told you if I didn't hear what I want to hear, we're going to have trouble, okay?
So go ahead. What are you looking for?
I'm going to switch. I know where you want to start. You want to start with the heart of your theory. Now, here's your theory. You say that few people are good at hiring the right people for their firm. Yes or no?
I wouldn't say it's few. It's the larger companies have it down much better than the mid-size and smaller ones, but there's a lot more mid-size and smaller companies than there are the super large ones.
Okay, so you told a story in one of your articles, which I read as my research for this interview. It's not like I didn't ignore what you've said, okay? You said you've been in a session where you're given a public speech, and you'll describe a certain salesperson, and you'll say to the people in the audience, who wants to hire this guy? And they'll all raise their hands, and you tell them you're jumping the gun because he might sound like a good salesman, but he might not be a fit for your firm. Yes or no? Is that right?
Absolutely true.
Okay, so now here's your chance. You say that they have to create a profile for the candidate who fits the specifics of their firm. And in one of your articles, you give some three methods of analysis. The product, you want to take a look at them in terms of the product, if they fit with the product, with the buying process, we'll go into all the details, and finally with the nature of the organization. Am I right?
Yep, you're correct.
Should I give you a chance to talk now?
Sure, that'd be just fine.
Go ahead. Be my guest.
Well, the places where it's probably a little bit obvious for your listeners is say, well, let's find somebody that sold the same thing as what we're selling here today. Well, that's somewhat limiting for your company, and you'll also find if you're trying to hire a competitor salesperson, as I painfully learned, hiring from the competition doesn't necessarily get you what you want either. I was in the technology education space, and we were selling high-end. We were doing face-to-face selling, and one of our competitors flopped. And all of a sudden, there was a mass exodus of salespeople. We hired a bunch of them in one day, and 3 months later, they were all gone. They all flopped.
Why?
My fault, not theirs, okay? Because they were used to selling cheap. They were used to teleselling. They were doing B2B sales. We were doing consumer sales. Complete mismatch, even though this was a competitor. And so we didn't take the time to profile out what it took for someone to be successful in our world. We just threw people into this. We were reforecasting. We were getting ready to expand based on all the hiring we had just done. And then it all blew up in our face. And so that's why I'm so passionate about the introspective exercise of figuring out who it is you really need to be successful in the role. I mean,
okay.
We got
the picture. Let's run through some of the factors that you've laid out in that article. Is that okay with you?
Yeah.
Anybody want to say anything before I get into this on the side there? Hey, you know, I think Maureen's with us as well. I gotta just see if she's there. Maureen, are you there?
I'm here.
Your picture, Lee, this is Maureen Sherub, the super vixen of telephone sourcing. I mean, like, every telephone sourcer's got the hots for her. I just want you to know who she is, okay?
Hello, Maureen.
Hi, how are you, Lee?
Yeah, but I got to complain, Maureen. Your number never shows up anymore. Everybody else's number shows except yours.
I'm call blocked. What can I say?
Well, I don't know. I asked you before. I'm going to miss you every time until you smarten up.
Okay, I'll unblock next time.
Okay, I got an 801 there as well. Do you want to say hi, 801, or should I just let you lurk?
That's too tall. Okay, you can lurk.
Well, who is it?
It's Robert Merrill.
Bobby Merrill from Good Recruits.
Hi.
Okay, I'll give you guys a chance before I go on. Maureen, did you want to say something to Lee?
No, just hi.
Okay, hi.
I came in about 5 minutes ago. Sorry, I'm late.
Bob, do you want to say something?
Not
Bob
really.
Merrill, do you want to say something?
I'm just listening in, animal.
Okay, fine. You stay there. Just let me know. Feel free. Okay, Lee, where were we? We're going to go through the product characteristics you lay out. When you want to analyze the ideal candidate, you've got to think of these factors. Can I go ahead?
Yeah, let's go ahead.
Okay, product, tangible, abstract, or concrete. Want to give us some examples?
Yeah, so for example, a tangible product would be a copier.
Okay.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Intangible or abstract would be training or consulting services.
Okay.
Okay, so that's really a complete separation of two types of items that you might sell. A copier, which is a product in a box, if you will.
Yep.
And consulting or maybe IT development, things where you don't have something specific you're selling. It's different for every single prospect.
Yeah, like a service or something. So what does concrete mean? Same as tangible?
Well, I was just using that as a synonym for tangible.
I thought you were just going to increase the word count or something like that in your essay.
Okay. Absolutely.
You've got here the nature of the buying relationship, a one-time transaction sale or a repetitive, complex one.
Right. So, for example, a simple sale, and simple not meaning easy, but simple as in one buyer, meaning one person's making the decision, they're only going to buy one time. For example, a car. I mean, maybe you'll buy a car again in a few years, but that's not typically thought of as a repetitive sale.
Mm-hmm.
But a more complex sale, for example, when I was in the employment screening industry, people are buying every single day as they're putting people through that screening process. So it's a continuous relationship, which means in addition to getting the actual contract, you have to continue to service it to make sure that they continue to buy from you.
Okay, so you can have a one-off sale, though, that's quite complex, like a house, for instance. Is that right?
Correct. When I talk complex, in that environment, you'd have two buyers, potentially a husband and wife. But complex, I'm looking at a CFO is going to get involved, the user is going to get involved, maybe if IT gets involved. So it's multiple departments that are getting involved in making a decision on a supplier.
Okay. Now, your next category, you want to know if the product is a component or if it's a comprehensive solution. So you don't want someone who's selling parts. What do they call those guys? What are the component manufacturers called? That's okay. Someone who's selling parts of a larger project per product, you don't want that guy selling a total solution. Is that right?
I'm not saying you don't want them. I'm just saying as you're going through and putting your profile together, where does your product fit?
Uh-huh.
So are you selling spark plugs that you put in the car, or are you selling the car?
Okay. And so then you want to know if the guy selling for or if your product is a high-profile brand name or an unknown product, right, in the market?
Yeah, and that's a great discussion point. In my book, I actually talk about this. I was living in the Washington, D.C. metro area when the dot-com craze was going.
Yeah.
And I had a lot of friends leave Microsoft and Cisco and Novell and take jobs at dot-coms. Well, when you're working for Microsoft and you call the CIO of a company and you want to schedule a meeting, the CIO says, when should I be available to meet with you? When you're working for a dot-com, ABC Technology, and I hope there's no real company ABC Technology, but ABC Technology, no name recognition, no brand recognition, you call the CIO, say, hey, I want to schedule a meeting with you. I'm sorry, who? Who are you? Never heard of you.
Mm-hmm.
And so the skill set is very, very different for the individual that's going to do that, and thus the people
What is the difference there?
Well, you have to sell your company before you can get in the door.
Okay, and some people aren't used to being challenged on that. Is that what you're saying?
Correct. If they don't have experience, so for example, if I was representing a company as a CEO that did not have the brand recognition out there and my audience didn't really know my name yet, I'd like a salesperson that has the ability to get a meeting with a decision maker when that they haven't heard of the company before. So they have some expertise in introducing a new company or a new brand to a potential buyer.
Okay. And you know what? We didn't really introduce you well enough. We'll do that in a second. The last product consideration is pricing. Are they selling something that's at the high end or somewhere else along the scale in their market? Am I right about that?
Yeah. If I'm a boutique-priced organization, meaning I have something that's different, it's in the upper end of pricing in the market, I want to find a salesperson that has some expertise in selling the boutique that's not going to be running my office every 10 minutes saying we got to discount our price 40% or we're going to lose the deal.
Okay. So before I go on to the nature of the buying process, Lee, you can find Lee's home on the internet at salesdodo.com. I see that as an unfortunate name, Lee. I'm going to be frank with you. But you say your point is in calling your company that companies have to be adaptive. And the sales dodo or the dodo itself was not an adaptive bird and became extinct. So you're using the name of your company as a negative example. Am I right about that?
Yeah, it's a metaphor for the bird that became extinct that couldn't adapt to its environment.
It is the bird. It's not a metaphor for the bird. It is the bird that became extinct. It's a metaphor for the company that is in danger of becoming extinct. Am I right?
You are correct.
Okay. Are you having fun, Lee? Or
I am having fun.
Okay, good. Does anybody want to say anything to Lee about the product characteristics, or should we go on? Okay, we're going to go on. Next step, Lee, is the buying process, okay? So you've got your expectations of the person regarding prospecting. You know, are you going to give the person the leads, or are they going to generate them themselves? That's a big issue, right?
It really is, because, you know, there are a lot of people, there's a common expression of the hunter-farmer relationship. I'm sure you folks have heard this before. But hunter is also a pretty broad term. There's hunters that just look at a building and say, I'm going to go get business out of that. And then there are people that are called hunters because they're generating new business. The company provides them with a lead of somebody who's never done business with them before.
Yeah.
And so based on what your lead generation program is going to be, you want to find people that have some expertise in doing that. And so if you're just going to say, here's the phone book, and we want you to go sell to these companies, well, you'd like somebody that's done something like that before. I'm sorry, go ahead.
So there's two kinds of hunters. That's kind of an interesting idea, right?
There are, yeah.
Okay, so they ought to have two different names for them, right?
Yeah, do you have ideas? I bet you do.
I'll bet. You know what? Harry, are you on the line now?
Yeah, can you hear me?
Barely. You and those phones. Do you have an idea? Lee's got a problem here. He's using the same word for two different kind of guys. Now, I just got to tell you, Lee, Harry's an artist, okay? and Harry Joyner, the marketing headhunter, everybody on this show right now is a genius. So you guys, don't worry. I'm not putting Harry ahead of you. But Harry used to run a lead generation company, so he knows something about that. Am I right, Harry?
You're right.
Okay, so here's Lee. He's calling the guys who generate their own leads, hunters, and he's calling the guys who are really good at going in there and selling new business as a hunter as well. Should they have different names? Are there any different names that you're aware of?
Nah, hunter's fine.
Okay,
what you want is somebody who is, genetically coded to break out in a rash when they're not on the telephone.
You're talking about
business.
Something different. Just step aside, will you? Okay. So there's the lead issue and then there's the buying process. How long is the buying process? Want to give me a little background on that? You didn't say too much in the article about it.
Yeah, this is one where if it takes 6 months from when someone first meets with you to when you see revenue, and then another 2 months to actually experience commission, there are a lot of great salespeople that will die in that kind of an environment. They need to win every single day. A very short cycle where they talk with somebody, decision's made, boom, they experience the thrill of victory.
Those guys or what?
Say that again?
Are they mental? They sound kind of crazy.
Which ones?
The guys who need to have a hit every day.
No, there are a number of sales environments. I mean, look at car sales. If your approach is to win every 6 months, you're not going to sell a lot of cars. You probably won't be employed either.
Okay.
Yep. But
that
you know,
sounds like more of a function of the industry than it does the different kinds of salespeople within the industry. You're not going to find real estate agents who are looking to close a sale every single day.
Well, he's
That's
saying
right.
that the character of the person has to be matched to the industry, right?
Right. What I'm talking about is that a company is putting together their pedigree of what they're going to be looking for in candidates and identifying, so how long is our process here? So let's say they say it takes 6 months to close a piece of business.
Yep.
Then one of the things they want to screen for in their candidates are people that are used to that kind of an environment.
Right.
That can survive 6 months.
Okay. You know what, Lee? We didn't say what you do. We said you're at Sales Dodo, but what do you do?
I'm a business consultant. I spend most of my time working with companies to build their sales talent screening programs. So things like what we're talking about here, helping to mine the information out of the business owners and the executives to get something fully documented of what it is their ideal, prioritize that, and then put together a screening program, interviews, etc., so that they can find the ideal people for their company, improve productivity, and reduce turnover.
So what we're going through now is really the heart of your business, am I right?
It's a big part of it, absolutely.
Okay, and are we getting it? So we're getting the stuff.
I think we are.
Okay, so the next thing you've got is off-the-shelf product or someone who has to, a technical person, you say build a solution for them. You want to give us some examples of what you mean there?
Yeah, a lot of time when you're talking about building a solution, if you're in the services space or if you are in consulting, like such as IT, if you're in the application development space, you really don't have a defined product per se. You kind of show up on the doorstep of a prospect and through needs analysis identify opportunities where your company can help them.
Yep.
So you have to mine that out.
Again,
so
that's a different kind of person than someone who's used to off-the-shelf sales. Is that what you're saying?
Correct. Where you just show up and say, I've got a box here, and hopefully through needs analysis we're going to find you need my box.
Okay. And so then the next question is, in the buying process category, at what level is the purchasing decision made? Who are the other buying players that influence the purchasing decision? Want to give us an example?
Sure. So if I'm in a financial sale and I know that the CFO is a major part of making any type of a selection and supplier for this type of service, I'd like someone that's experienced in the CFO suite. They know how to have conversations with them. They know what makes them tick, et cetera. If I'm in the IT space and I know that CIOs get involved heavily in the process, I would also like to have somebody that has some experience in working with these kinds
of
folks.
Okay, this sort of relates to the complex sale where there's a number of people involved. Is that true?
It sort of does. It doesn't matter if it's simple or complex. Even if it's one person that's going to make the decision, what I'm looking for is somebody that has experience in working with that specific individual.
Okay. Okay, now this is a question. I read this on a blog called Sales Rainmakers once. You say, what sales support is available for the salespeople? Is the salesperson required to go from end to end, or is the salesperson only required to handle certain parts of the process? What they said there is if you hire somebody from, let's say, a high-profile company, they were talking about not account management, but really administrative support. They say that, you know, if you're coming from a big-name company, you don't have to do any paperwork. If you go to a smaller company, you got a lot of administrative duties, and it usually doesn't match. Is that what you're talking about, or something different?
No, I'm actually talking about something different. I'm talking about the sale itself. There are some companies where the expectation of the salesperson is you just get the door open, you get the meeting scheduled with the right people, and we'll bring in the troops, the experts, what have you, to handle it from there. There are others that say, okay, you do the needs analysis, you get them ready, and then when there's the group presentation, then we'll get the troops ready. You're just going to sit on the sidelines, and we'll take the ball from there. I mean, just one that your listeners can probably relate to very simply is a car sale, right? Very rarely is the transaction completed with the car salesperson. The car salesperson has some dialogue with you, right? They take you on the test drive. But when it comes down to talking numbers, someone else shows up, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Okay.
And so that's what I'm talking about from the
sales. Does someone else show up, or does the guy go back and forth and say, I got to talk to my manager? That kind of thing, you mean, right?
It could be that. But in other words, if you're expecting somebody that's going to look in the phone book and identify a company that they're going to call on, get a meeting, create the proposal, close the deal, and implement the deal, that's a particular skill set that you'd want in a salesperson that you'd want to be interviewing for.
A lot of tech people are involved in team selling. So there's one guy who makes a sale, and then there's a techie who comes in as a pre-sale support person and talks to the other techies in the firm. Is that what we're talking about here?
Exactly. And the smaller companies, to come back to where you were before, the smaller companies may not have that available. They may say, you know what, salesperson, you're going to have to get up to speed, and hopefully we're hiring somebody that has some knowledge in this space that they can have that kind of conversation and get the deal done.
Mm-hmm. Okay, well, this looks like a pretty good list of things to consider to me. Does anybody else want to – there's a lot of people on the – salespeople on the phone now. Anybody want to challenge our friend Lee on anything he said about, you know, products, tangible –
There you go. You're making fun of my name. Call me friendly.
Okay. Ha, 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 ha. You know, you're not that funny, I got to tell you. Anybody want to talk to Lee? You know, what do you guys call in for if you got nothing to say? You're just supposed to be my experts. Okay. We'll leave them behind. What should we talk about next? Or is there some way you want to finish talking? I really am impressed by your list here. Now, somebody else might not be. I always hear people saying to me I'm wrong after the show. They don't
hey, Animal, it's,
yeah.
Can I ask just a quick question?
Go ahead.
Just came to mind. Thank you. And this might be for the both of you. Obviously, Lee has to sell himself. He has many different things that he's selling. He's got a book.
Yep.
He's a consultant. So I guess looking in, Lee, how do you see yourself? How do you go about doing this for you?
I'm not sure I understand your question.
Prospects? Well, you're having to sell yourself. You're having to sell your book. You're having to sell these different things. So if you look at your process and identifications and so on and so forth, you know, how is it something that you go about?
Yeah, the kind of business you're in, Lee,
mm-hmm.
where you're selling your books, you're selling your own consulting expertise, a non-tangible there. The books are tangible, I guess,
mm-hmm.
and the consulting services are non-tangibles, and then well, I don't know what the buying or sales process is there, and I don't know what kind of organizational issues at the client end you have to handle. So would you hire yourself to do your job?
I would, because when I look at the things that I'm doing and I go through this list, I have had long sales cycles. I've had short sales cycles. I've done the repetitive sale. I've done the multiple buyers. I've sold in the boutique market, which is the way I price myself.
Okay, but you're saying, okay, here now you're telling me you're covered all bases. What kind of sales are required? This is what the workforce is asking, essentially, what kind of sales skills are required for the kind of selling that you have to do in your own business today?
Well, it's actually somewhat subtle. For one, I don't do any cold calling, which probably doesn't make a lot of sense to your listeners, saying that I'm a business consultant with a concentration in sales. But could you imagine you're running a sales organization and I call you and say, by the way, I'm the greatest consultant out there. Let me help you with your sales organization. Well, you're going to be thinking, if you're so good, why aren't you billable right now? So my approach is to do shows like yours, Recruiting Animal, and be out there in public doing speaking events, writing articles, as you've seen, so that people get a taste of what it is I'm about. And then as a result, they come to me and they say, hey, we'd like your help with X and Y.
Mm-hmm. And so is there a name for that kind of sales approach?
Maybe call it passive sales. I don't know. I haven't seen an actual name for it, but I guess you can call it passive sales.
Work Farce, is that okay?
Yeah, it's good enough for me. I appreciate it. Thank you, Lee.
You're welcome.
No problem.
You'd be thanking me, not him, okay? Now listen, speaking of passive sales, you've got an article that says, I think you called it How to Lure Passive Sales Candidates. Am I right?
Yep.
Okay. Well, I have a beef with you about that because you're not really talking about luring them. You're not luring someone is luring someone who's happy in their job and isn't looking for a job, and you lure them. I read that article, and you primarily said, keep your eyes out for companies where there's changes going on inside, and these sales reps are going to get worried. If there's financial problems, they think, oh, I bet they're going to, you know, cut people. I better start looking for a new job. If there's a change in management, you know, maybe they won't like me. Maybe they're going to change the territories or do something I don't like. Acquisition rumors, again, there's something going on. You've got, it's a legitimate thing. You've got your eyes peeled on the media and the rumor mill to locate companies where there's, you know, potential problems. That's not the same thing as luring a passive candidate. Am I right, Lee? Will you give me that?
Sort of. When I'm saying passive, I mean that they're not openly on the job market today. And in essence, your role as a recruiter is to build some pain, if you will, in this person. And my argument in this is that not enough recruiters use fear as one of the leverage points. They use greed, hey, come work in this company, you'll make more money. But they don't leverage the fear factor, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
Because salespeople are motivated by one of those two. Some will argue that it's both, but there's always one that's more dominant of the two.
Okay, we got, in addition to me, we got two recruiters on the line who are better salesmen than me. I'm going to say that's absolutely true. We got Bob Merrill and Harry Joyner. You guys want to chime in on that? Do you guys use fear to dislodge people? Maybe they hung up. Are you there?
Yeah, no, I didn't hang up. Did I?
Well, I can't hear you.
Do I use fear to dislodge my competitors or to get my
No, when you want to recruit somebody, you're recruiting an e-commerce manager or VP or something, how do you get them to move? Using fear or attractive forces?
It's attractive forces because it's a relationship sell, right? If you go around trying to motivate people with fear. Now, I'm speaking for my space, right? So fear is valid and it works like a charm. In situations where you're probably never going to see the candidate again, right? So if it's an incremental approach to recruiting, which is what this show is about, then it doesn't matter. Then you can use fear, uncertainty, and doubt, right? FUD, to motivate your candidates. Because in the reality, you know, most people are a lot more motivated by fear and uncertainty.
Give me an example, Harry. Give me an example.
Okay, an example would be lower-level IT recruiting or lower-level inside sales recruiting. Gee, your industry sucks. It looks really unstable this year. There's going to be a recession. Let's say you're in the real estate industry. The real estate markets are unstable. Why don't you take a shot in my client's industry? My client's in the, I don't know, give me an industry, aerospace industry. That's a lot more recession-proof. You're not going to miss any paychecks if you – you know, make this change now. That's a whole lot more effective than if I went to a VP of e-commerce for Sharper Image or Amazon.com and tried to use fear, uncertainty, and doubt on them. That's not what they're about. They're about fun, future, and finance. So I'm using carrots with higher level executives in growth-oriented industries, and I'm using sticks or the threat of sticks with lower level executives in unstable or mature or price-sensitive industries.
Okay, Bob, you got anything to
add to that?
Who's that?
It's David. Can I add to that?
Yeah, sure, Dave.
I also think that people are pretty much already aware of what they fear.
when the economy is going downhill, their company's going downhill, when sales aren't meeting expectations, they're aware of that. It's what they wake up thinking about every morning. I don't know how effective you can really be at stoking fears that aren't already there. I think that at best it can kind of be, well, okay, I already knew that, and at worst it can be viewed as manipulative by the candidates.
Which is why I it's not a common thing for me to use at all. I mean, if I'm at a certain vantage point to see a vulnerability in the candidate's situation, you know, that it's not like – maybe it's just that they didn't see it. You know, it's not that it doesn't exist. They just didn't notice it. I might point it out, but, yeah, you're exactly right. Typically, I wouldn't use fear, uncertainty, and doubt. It's not my style, and it's not effective for all the reasons you said.
Now, Mike, for one point I want to make here is that I'm not talking about this in generalities. I'm talking specifically with salespeople.
Okay.
Okay, and sales managers every day as they're trying to motivate their teams are using greed and they're using fear as motivation tools. And so if we're talking about candidates that are not on the market, if you're trying to get the top salesperson from a company, and I'm not suggesting that you're disingenuous about it, but if you're seeing that a company has missed earnings three or four times in a row, it's a very fair conversation to ask someone, so what are your thoughts on the company as earnings have been missed for the last four quarters?
Okay, see, but my point was that you're agreeing with exactly what Dave said. You're working with stuff that's already a known. And I agree with you. You should take advantage of that once you make the call. But
yeah.
I would say that's a little different from just, you know, working with somebody who's happy at his job where there's no problems and you try to pull them out to another firm. I see that has to be, let's say, what you call the greed factor or Harry called the carrot. You got to tell them, you know, there's something better ahead. You know, it's a blue sky issue rather than watch out.
Absolutely, and my point is not. I'm not saying not to play greed. What I'm saying is don't forget the fear too.
Okay, but we're arguing with you that there's certain circumstances in which it's, and I think you agree with us if we went on longer, which we're not going to. That it's in special circumstances where they already kind of are aware of the problem. That's the case. Although, let me give you a last thing. Can you imagine a situation where the sales rep is not aware of certain dangers that you're bringing forward?
Is that a question for me?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, because they may not connect the dots if they're seeing certain things in the economy. Let's say it's a large company and they've missed earnings or, you know, there's various stories out in the media about acquisition or all of those kinds of things. They may not connect the dots and say, hey, you know what? This could affect me. And so part of that discussion that a recruiter could have with this individual is helping them to recognize that, yeah, this could come down and affect you.
Okay.
And if that does, what does that mean?
Okay, we're leaving it very theoretical, but we'll put it there. If you come up with a concrete example, well, you can just bring it up, either now or later on, okay?
You got it.
Okay, I have another beef with you, okay? You say you only want to hire people who aren't after a paycheck, but they are in love with the company. And I got to tell you, how many companies are that lovable?
Where did I say that?
Didn't you say it in our conversation yesterday?
No. I'm saying that money can't be the lead factor. In other words, for a salesperson, if the only reason they want to work in your company is you presented an opportunity where they have the potential to make more money.
Yeah. What's
okay.
wrong with that?
Nothing's wrong with that, except it's a mirage if they don't have the ability to do it. If they've BS'd their way through the interview process and represented themselves as something that is not true and they don't have the skill set to do it, well, then all those numbers they've heard about are going to be mirages.
Hold on. No, maybe I misunderstood you, but I thought if you are in an interview with someone this is the question I believe you ask, why do you want to work here? And if they say, I want to make both of us money, that's not a good enough question. You want guys to say, oh, I've got a passion for your company, you're beautiful, I dream of you every night, and stuff like that.
No, because I believe it's not so much the company, but I do believe someone's ability to be successful in selling, they need to be passionate what it is they're representing, whatever that is. If it's cars, if it's steak knives, if it's technology, whatever it is, that they need to be passionate about it. because if they're not passionate about it, people aren't going to buy.
Okay, well, so you're talking about the product then, right?
It could be the product, could be the company. I don't care what it is, but it's got to be something more than just saying, I want to be here because I'm going to make us both a lot of money. Well, then my follow-up would be, and tell me how you're going to accomplish that.
I'm a good salesman. I want to make a hit every day. I'm a hunter. I got to sell.
And what's going to make you passionate about selling for me?
Money.
Sorry,
well, Maureen's going to agree with me on this, right? Are you still there?
I'm here.
What do you think?
Animal, I don't agree with you.
Who's that?
This
Bob?
Is Rob Merrill.
Okay, Maureen, you've been sidetracked. Bobby, go ahead.
I agree that a salesperson needs to be interested in making money, but if you press them on the issue and they can't come up with any other reason why they want to work for you, they're going to cut corners, they're going to make unethical decisions, they're going to be faced with things that you don't want them out there representing you that way.
You know,
they're going to ruin your brand.
That's a logical leap. I don't see any justification for what you said at all. You're saying the person has no integrity. They're being perfectly straightforward with you. They say they want to make a good living.
If they can't come up with any other reason why they want to work for you, that's not the person you want to hire.
Gee whiz. Anybody agree with me?
Yeah, actually, I can think of instances where somebody would go to another company just for the money. I mean, it happens.
You know, Maureen, can you get on the handset? We can't hear you.
I'm sorry, it's that bad.
And, Mike, remember, I'm talking about salespeople.
Yeah, okay. We're talking.
Right.
These are all salespeople here.
We're talking about salespeople too. You know, I mean, it's like dealing with a professional athlete. There are a lot of professional baseball players who will go to another team just because the money is better. And in certain industries, like advertising, for example, or insurance, or real estate, or whatever, you know, if the commission payout is higher, you know, the product is basically the same. They've already got the relationships. The industry is the same. Nothing's going to change but the size of the paycheck. People leave all the time.
Harry's talking about commodity-style companies. Is that right, when they're all really the same?
No, not necessarily. But it's because of the nature of the business of selling in certain industries, you're in business for yourself, right? So, well, I mean, one of the reasons why I left my old employer was because I had a bunch of client relationships and I failed to see the reason why I should pay anybody a cut of the money. So, in fact, I went into business for myself just to give myself a raise. But it was partly about the freedom, but it was mostly about the money, right? If the money had been the same, I probably would have just stayed put. So money matters. Money always matters. And it really matters a lot to salespeople. Salespeople are money motivated. If you show me a salesperson who's not money motivated, I'll show you a failure.
I agree with that. And I don't know, Harry, I think salespeople are by nature entrepreneurial.
Yeah, absolutely.
I think I would agree with that, Maureen. And Harry, I agree with the both of you. I think that two things that I've seen over time, money and place play a huge role for salespeople.
And not
place in terms of company, place geographically. If they have the ability to be creative, you know, and also the type of work environment. So, you know, passion for a product, I think it can be learned and taught. I think money plays a huge role for sales folks.
Okay, let me bring something
Michael,
in.
Michael, when people ask me, how much money do you want to make or how much money do you have to make, you know what my answer is? All I can.
Congratulations.
I want to make all I can make.
Very good. Everybody does. But, you know, you don't want to work in a company where I'll say, you know, this is another – I'm going to give Lee a break before he says the candidate has to interview the client, and you want to have a cultural fit. You don't want to work for some jerk, right? So that's a factor as well. And they keep saying when you are pushing your company's brand to potential recruits is that, you know, people want to work for a company that's doing good things in society. I don't know if that's true, but obviously I think that Lee would agree with that, and maybe Bob Merrill as well. But let me pose a question for you, Lee, that relates to this. I used to work extensively with Anthony J. Meany. He's a super recruiter, and then he went on to work with Pitney Bowes. I'll tell you, you know that company, right? They're making
sure.
The copiers and things like that. I hope I'm not revealing too much. He was their sales recruiter nationwide, and he told me there's two kinds of sales reps. There's a sales rep who sells a product he believes in, and there's a sales rep who sells anything. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, that sounds right.
Okay.
But I'm back to the earlier conversation. I'm saying the one that would just go sell anything is not someone I'd want on my team because I don't believe that's my long-term player.
Maybe, you know, because those guys do sound a bit unethical. Maybe that's the connection that the Bob Merrill was bringing in there. If they don't care about anything but money, they're too narrow-minded for me. Is that what you were saying, Bob?
That's exactly what I was saying.
Okay.
And I don't mean that someone has to have a big, you know, pie-in-the-sky vision of that they're really excited about the industry. I think making money can be 80% of why they're working for you. But if they don't have some kind of other reason why, maybe because they think you're a good mentor for them or they think there's a good career path for them. I'm not saying they have to stick with you forever either, but if they're representing you only for the money, you've got to wonder what happens at nighttime when no one's looking.
Okay. Okay.
Well, I mean, it's you have a what have you done for me lately kind of relationship with the employee where, you know, they're going to be around for as long as your paychecks to them are the biggest.
We can barely hear you, Harry.
Well,
but don't you think that's business overall? What have you done for me lately, Harry?
Okay, I got to put you guys aside. I got a few questions. We're running out of time, okay? We'll come back to you. Sorry. I know I asked for your input, but it's a little indirect right now. Lee, are you ready?
Fire away.
The flinch test. You say that if a sales rep gives his price and the other guy flinches at the price or objects, and then the salesman sort of flinches or you know, looks like he's going to give way, that's a very bad thing for a salesperson. But I read that in negotiations, when someone gives you a high price, that you should flinch. It's sort of a fake to say, geez, that hurts, and that'll get them to drop their price. So there's a number of different kinds of flinch things in a negotiation. I'm wondering if a sales rep is not supposed to ask a high price and he's not supposed to blink when they, you know, test him on it, well, how does that relate to negotiations over money? Because a company only has so much money to spend.
And sure, so procurement officers and experts in purchasing, they're trained that when a salesperson makes a proposal to them, no matter what it is, if they said it's a penny, to go, oh, my God, I didn't know it was going to be that expensive. They're trained to do that. They get measured on their ability to knock that price down, whatever it is, whatever the opening number is. And so my point with the flinch test is that's, in essence, what they're doing. They want to see how convinced the salesperson is that the number they put on the table is right. Okay? And so the salesperson should be very, very confident when that person comes back and says, oh, my God, I didn't know it was going to cost that much, or wow, that's twice as much as everybody else. First of all, it may not be true. You know, it's just their way of seeing if you're going to be sticking with that number or you've got room to wiggle. And what a lot of salespeople do is they go, oh, well, let me go ask my manager and see if I can get that down 20%.
Yeah, okay. But what about when it's you? What about it's when it's you you're selling? I like you as a sales rep. I want Lee to come onto my team as a trainer or something like that. You ask me a price, and I say, that's too high. What are you going to do?
Are you talking about if
I want to hire you, let's say. Yeah, we're going to hire you as our employee. Imagine. It's
yep.
a fantasy, right?
There you go. Okay, so if someone was looking to hire me to do work for them and I tell them the price, and this happened to me just last week, and someone said, wow, that's a lot.
Yeah.
And I said, yep, that's my hourly rate.
Yeah, okay, so an employee should be ready to walk away then, right? I'm just wondering if there's a trick here in negotiations. You can ask your top price and expect to get it or walk. I mean, what's the alternative?
Well, if they're dealing with a recruiter, the recruiters typically know what the price point is for the candidate and where they're looking to be, and so they can be an intermediary. When you don't have a recruiter in place, hopefully at some point in the process, the company has shared their range, at least, of how they compensate for the role. And so very early on, you learn whether or not this is going to be a match or not. It shouldn't be a surprise when the company makes an offer to you and they say the base salary is $60,000. It's the first time you've had any inkling of what they're going to how they're going to compensate you.
Okay, so let's put that aside. Let me ask you another question.
That's a fascinating subject, negotiation, Michael.
Yeah, okay, but we're not going to have it right now. We're running out of time.
We can
okay.
come back and spar on that another time, Mike.
Yeah, let's
yeah.
come back on that because that really is fascinating. And you said an important thing. You liked him. I don't think people buy because of price. I think people buy because of personality.
I agree.
Mm-hmm.
I can agree with that.
I think people buy because there's a solid product that they actually have a need for.
Okay,
well,
we got a
bunch
of different ideas.
That's true. It has
ideas.
To be a solid product, but I think they have to like the salesperson in order to buy, don't you?
I don't know. I buy from airlines all the time, and
can't stand
them. Okay,
okay,
here's where I get where I want to go.
Excellently put.
This is an important question. Lee is a big believer in positive candidate experience. He's obviously working with some companies that hire huge numbers of inside salespeople, telemarketers, whatever. And he said, you know, you get tons of applications for these positions. You know, you better let the people know when they've been rejected. Don't keep them hanging. I'm in total agreeance with that. But he also says that your recruiters, the recruiters you hire, the third-party recruiters, don't work for your firm, but they are representing you. And if they don't treat the candidates out there, they're going to turn a lot of people against your company. And they'll spread bad, you know, press or rumors about who you are. Lee, am I right about that?
You are correct.
So how do you handle that when you hire a third-party recruiter?
Well, when I've done it in the past, I've set some expectations for the recruiter, and I've made sure that they understand my point of view, that I see them as an extension of my business. And so when they're working with candidates, it's as if I'm working with those candidates. So if they blow them off or they don't treat them well, then it's my company that also takes the hit right along with that recruiting firm. You know,
yeah.
Even the, there are a lot of candidates out there that don't recognize that they are the product, not the client, if you will. Most of the recruiting firms that I've worked with, I pay them as the employer. And so the candidates are the product. And as the product, they don't, and because of that disconnect that they're the product and not necessarily the client, their expectations are a bit different. And so if those aren't managed and set correctly, then you wind up with issues.
Okay. Okay. Now I'm coming to the final question, but this is the penultimate question. So if you are a guy like a clean freak and you carry some of this antibacterial lotion in your pocket with you and you're in the washroom, should you pretend to wash your hands after you've actually done it yourself in the stall so no one gets the wrong idea? The problem then is you have to touch the taps and you're getting your hands contaminated again, right?
Michael,
I think you're watching a little too much Seinfeld, because there's a whole episode on that.
Well, I guess I missed it. I didn't know. Okay.
With Poppy not washing his hands and
Poppy,
going out
yeah,
to dinner.
I saw that. Right, yeah. Okay. Anyway, here's what I consider to be your most controversial idea. You said you asked candidates for a one-page business plan that shows how they would approach the job. And I mentioned three times that I'm only looking for one page, and then I tell them, I ask when they can send it to me, and so I give them a date, I give them a limit to the size of the thing, and it's very important also, you know, the quality of the writing. That's very important to you. That sounded kind of outlandish to me. I want you to talk a bit about it, and I'll give everybody a free hand to chime in if they've got something to say.
Perfect. And that's a tool that I've used for a number of years. And you don't do it for your inside salespeople. You're doing it with high-level outside salespeople and sales managers. What I want to know is, after this person's interviewed with my firm X number of times, talked to Y number of people, I want to see, A, if they are philosophically aligned with the business. Do they understand what the job is? I'd like to see what their approach would be, because we talked earlier about salespeople wanting to be creative. You know, what their approach would be to make the job a success, because we're not just hiring them, we're making an investment. And so that's one aspect of the exercise. But one of the things that's just terrible today is people don't know how to write. And so we're so reliant on email, whether it be on BlackBerries where you don't have a spell check today, you know, and emails, proposals,
what
have you.
How important is writing, really?
Very.
I think it's huge.
Very important.
And maybe I'm a little biased because I grew up in a household where my mother was an educational evaluator in the New York City school system. I didn't let her see my book till my editor was done with it. You know? So that could be my own bias, but I'm a firm believer that if somebody writes poorly and they're representing a company, that creates an image in the receiver's mind of this company's not buttoned up.
Okay. I used to know a very good salesman who was dyslexic. Maybe that's a special case. I don't know. Bob Merrill, if you want to say something about that.
A lot of entrepreneurs are dyslexic.
So they wouldn't get hired. I don't think dyslexia and misspelling are necessarily related.
I think getting the message through is what's important, but you don't want to let things that you could correct get in the way of communicating clearly.
Log Talk Radio.
They'll give us a bit more time. We're out of time. Just wrap it up. Would you guys, let me ask you one by one, if you gave somebody this test and he didn't write a good essay, would you hire him? Dave Manister, yes or no?
What test is this?
He asked the guy to, to write a one-page business plan about why he wants to work with this firm and what he's going to accomplish there. And he says, if the guy's not a decent writer, I don't want him. Do you agree?
I don't know if essay writing would be the way I'd approach that. I think if I saw glaring errors in the written communications I'd had with that person, cover letter, things like that, I'd have a problem with it.
Hey, Mike, I'll give you a real one.
I'll give you a real one.
In this one-page document, I had a candidate spell my company wrong three different ways.
Oh, well, you're talking about an idiot there. Either an idiot or someone
who's
got dyslexia. Okay.
Well, there's nothing that says, if, let's say you're dyslexic, there's nothing that says you can't have a friend eyeball it before you send it in.
Okay, you know what? I'm kind of with you there, because I've had people who, I had one girl, a very bright accountant, she sent me a cover letter or a letter once, and it was, she was from China. There was a lot of mistakes in it. I told her, you know, you better get somebody to read your stuff before you send it to me. And in fact, she said she did, but she gave it to another Chinese person, so it didn't work very well. Okay, last comments. Bob Merrill, got anything you want to say to Lee?
Well, to answer your question about the letter, I think that's not going to be the only thing I decide on, but I think it's an interesting way to approach more information about how that person works in a critical communication situation.
Okay. Maureen, anything for Lee?
Thanks for coming on to Lee.
Oh, yeah.
Lee.
Dave Manister.
It was really an interesting discussion.
We'll bring him back. Dave
Manister. I had a ball.
Okay, good.
I had a ball.
You want to say something for Lee?
Yeah, I agree. Thanks for coming
on. Okay, you know what? I don't know if they're here. I can't play any music on it. That's it. Goodbye, everybody.
Is Workforce still on?
Yes.
I bet Harry has something to say.
No, Harry's gone. You don't have to tell him. He knows. Goodbye, everybody.
Goodbye.
Bye.
Bye-bye.